Hi, welcome to True Creeps, where the stories are true and the creeps are real. We'll cover stories from grotesque gore to the possibly plausible paranormal, to horrifying history, to tense and terrible true crime, and everything else that goes bump in the night. We're your hosts, Amanda.
And I'm Lindsay, and we want you to join us while we creep.
We cover mature topics. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, everyone. Today, we are going to be discussing a haunting that led to someone's murder.
It does, in fact, feel like an adult episode of Scooby-Doo. In a good way. It has that feeling to it. It's the energy. It's Scooby-Doo energy.
It is Scooby-Doo energy. Yeah, absolutely.
If Scooby-Doo involved murder.
Right, right. It's very bizarre, and I had never heard of this before.
It's also old-timey.
It is very old-timey, and I kind of love it. Mm-hmm. Evil horses are there, too, I decided.
I feel like old-timey, non-American murders, we have so much of our, like, inside jokes or merch have to do with that. Think of, like, the evil horse from Plucky. Then, obviously, the Lonely Windmill Boy, also from Plucky.
Mm-hmm. Our emo album.
Yes, our emo album. Mozart is emo. All these things are from England. We love an old-timey, not American murder is what I'm trying to say.
Love it. Now, yeah, like I said, I hadn't heard of this one before, and I kind of stumbled upon it. And as I was reading, I'm like, oh no. Like, I didn't expect a haunting to turn into a full-blown murder.
Never.
I feel like those paths don't really cross usually.
Normally, it's the other order.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's not, oh, there's a haunting, then shit goes down. Normally, it's like, it's haunted because shit went down.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. So another interesting note about this, without giving too much away, is that this specific case left a mark in English legal history as well. So that's, you know, Lindsay's wheelhouse there.
Oh,
we're
going to
talk a little bit about law later.
I'm no barrister, though.
No, but it's okay. We'll get there by the end of the episode.
Perfect. Perfect. We'll wear wigs.
So let's dive in. Let's talk first about the haunting. And the haunting took place in Hammersmith, London. And Hammersmith is located about 4 miles west of Buckingham Palace. When this story took place, it was in the 1800s, and Hammersmith was just a small village, and it was on the border of where the countryside and the city met. And the area was in the process of transitioning from a rural area to more of an urban suburb. In late 1803, residents of Hammersmith were being terrorized by a ghost.
Oh,
exactly.
Perfect, right? That's the sound ghosts make.
It is. It is. I'm sure the sound this ghost made, too. But in this time period, just to kind of paint a picture here, ghost stories, superstitions, supernatural beliefs, all of that were very common. So many people believed in ghosts and other paranormal things. So if someone's like, this is haunted, they're like, yep, it's haunted.
Yeah, yeah. And even well through the 1800s, spiritualism was going, right? So
yes,
it was on its way to becoming even more popular.
Correct. Yes, yes. So the people of the area believed that the spirit that was haunting it was from a man who had killed himself the year prior by slitting his throat.
Are we sure he slit his own throat? Because I already don't believe that. That seems like the worst way.
I'm not sure. I could not find a name for this man. And not much is about it, only that someone died via suicide and that where he was buried played a role in it. So the man was buried in a churchyard, which was against church law and many people's beliefs at the time. Basically, the belief was if someone died by suicide and they were buried on consecrated ground, they would be unable to find eternal rest and would end up, quote, wandering the earth.
Hey.
Right? I'm like, that's not his fault.
Mm-mm.
At the time, others that had died by suicide were typically buried at a crossroads outside of town.
I just need you to know that I am already skeptical of this lore because in the early 1900s, crime scenes were not watched, were not handled, were not investigated in any way even remotely close to where we're at. So you can bet your bippy that 100 years before that, it was even worse. In my head, the crime scene there was like, we'll just put the knife in the guy's hand. People will make their own assumptions.
Yeah, probably.
I'm nervous. I'm nervous, right? About that already.
Poor guy. And they're blaming him for the haunting, mm-hmm. Which not cool. But there were a variety of sightings and even some attacks by the ghost.
And just like cryptids, the descriptions, they really vary. So some described the ghost as looking like it was a white cloth or a sheet. So just old school, traditional ghost. While others speculated, it actually may have been more of like a mist or a haze. And if you're thinking of like just the difference in these, if I saw a person walking around covered in a sheet, I'm going to have questions, but I don't think I'm going to be afraid. I might be afraid that they're going to like walk into traffic or something, but not afraid of them. But I would be unnerved if it was in the middle of the night and I look outside and it's the 1800s and someone is covered in a sheet just milling about the town. Like, that is unnerving.
Right, at night.
At night. I mean, like, anytime anyone's doing anything at night, I'm looking outside like, what are you doing?
Skepticism goes up for sure. But also then when there's not like as much light too, like in one of these old time villages.
Yeah.
And then you just see the typical ghost under a sheet, you know, wandering around.
Also, I would just imagine, though, like if you're thinking of like later at night or like in the wee hours of the morning, there could have been fog, too. So like that kind of mixes with the if you saw a person just walking around in a sheet, bizarrely, it might look like mist because of like the way that colors bounce. But sometimes people also said that they would see the apparition, if you will, wearing a calfskin garment.
No, thank you.
Okay. Okay. Yet another description was that it's large. Someone else said it had horns. Some said that it instilled fear, while some said it had large glass eyes. We're moving about.
Hate it.
We're changing things around. Is it a white sheet with large glass eyes? Because now all I'm picturing is large sheet, googly eyes, made of glass. That sounds precarious.
That's unsettling, though.
And heavy. Unsettling. If someone is walking around in a white sheet, I'm like, that's weird. But you would have to hold the eyes. And I feel like they'd be like, on me, boob level, it was what would make sense. So that's what I'm picturing, is a person in a sheet holding two glass eyes at boob level.
You know what it reminds me of?
Huh?
Just because it's like an unsettling thing in like a sheet and odd characteristics. It reminds me of when we talked about like that Christmas horse, Mary Lewitt, I believe, and how like unsettling when people like dress up as her, it looks.
Yeah. Because it's like a horse skull.
And she had like
sheet.
The white sheet.
Yeah. It's a whole fucking vibe.
Yeah. But I love it.
But okay. So like we've got honestly so far just a menagerie of descriptors. Many people believe that the figure would appear at 1 a.m. after the church bell would ring. And it was believed to move along the fields that were adjacent to Black Lion Lane. But some sightings just took place at night before 1 a.m., so it varied. So let's talk about some notable interactions and attacks. Scooby-Doo shit, if you will.
Yes.
Mr. Russell was driving a wagon with 8 horses and 16 passengers when he spotted the ghosts. This is a fourth grade math problem. Doesn't it sound like the start of one?
It really does.
Doesn't it?
And like the details have nothing to do with anything either, but it's just
if 3 of his horses turn evil, one of them stops to eat an apple, and 2 become
one
Pegasi. How many horses does he have left?
You missed my Spice Girls reference.
I didn't
there.
Hear you. And what'd you say?
You said when 2 become, and you paused.
Oh my god!
And I said 1.
You know I love. I'm not going to do it again because they get mad when I sing ghost songs as Spice Girl parodies. Goodness. Okay, so let's talk about Mr. Russell's math problem. So he was driving a wagon with 8 horses and 16 passengers when he spotted the ghost. He was so frightened that he jumped out of the wagon and ran away.
He left them all. He's like, fuck you guys. Bye.
Yeah. Then he left his 16 passengers and 8 horses to fend for themselves. And we couldn't find the passengers' perspective on this, but I would have loved to see it because they're in the back handling themselves among the wagon, right? Like, it's probably like a bumpy ride. And all of a sudden, he's just gone.
Yeah.
One person's account would be, Mr. Russell, you left me with the 8 horses and 15 other passengers. What do I do now? Like, did they just go on without him?
Now I have to drive this.
Oh, God, yeah. I guess I'll step up. I'm Mr. Russell now.
But like, I love that this was an encounter that is talked about in every
it's very important
depiction of the story. Yeah.
But I love the math problem of it. What a treat.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, back to our haunting. A man named Thomas Groom was walking through the churchyard with his hands in his pockets, holding a jacket under his arm.
So 2 pockets, 1 jacket?
Yes. Okay.
I'm just getting the numbers here for our next math problem.
It's important. Now, some versions say that he was walking with someone, but only in certain versions, not all of them. Then, suddenly, from behind a tombstone, someone grabbed him from behind.
They're really behind in things. Also,
they're really behind.
I just need you to know, as soon as you said he was walking with someone, I was like, are they carrying a jacket? Does that mean we're up to four pockets, two jackets? I was immediately taking inventory.
I don't know. There's no information about the companion.
I need more numbers.
No.
That's the one thing that's missing from most ghost stories is more numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think more people would be successful at math if all math problems were part of a ghost story.
Yeah, because you'd be traumatized into learning. You'd want to know how many ghosts were left and how many of those horses became evil.
All of them is the answer.
It's important. Oh, shit. Amanda. Great. Now we're going to get your first bad review because of you. And it's going to be the horse girls. They're going to come for you.
Oh, man. We're fucked.
Not the horse girls. We love you, horse girls. You're fine. I'm not a horse girl, but I have no judgment. I was a little cat lady. I still am. I got the run squad. Anywho, I mean, it's like, we're going to get back to this ghost story. And in my head, I went, for now. Like,
for now.
For now.
It's fine. Like a threat. It's fine. So, of course, yeah. Something from behind a tombstone grabbed him from behind. The unknown attacker grabbed him by the neck.
Oh.
With two hands. And then somehow, I don't understand this, spun him around?
Is he an owl?
I don't know. Like, grabbing someone by the neck and then spinning them.
Did he, like, grab him from the front and the back of the neck? Also, by the way, as soon as Amanda said it, I immediately put my little paws out and was like, how does that work?
How does that work?
Yes.
No idea.
Maybe it's a thick neck person. You know what I mean? Maybe they got a real thick, maybe Mr. Groom's got a thick neck.
But the ghost must have been very strong, though. Can you imagine grabbing someone by the neck and being able to spin them? A tall man? I don't know.
I have nothing appropriate to say right now. I have no podcast. This exists in the business world where I also exist, where anyone who I work with listens to this. But just in case, I can't. I've got nothing I could say in response to that that can go in here. You keep going.
But anyway,
I embarrassed myself. I'm making myself blush.
Okay, so he's getting attacked by this ghost, right? Now, if you're getting attacked by a ghost and you're turned around and nothing's there, so nothing's there when he turns around, he doesn't see anything. I don't know if I would do this next part, but his thought process was, I need to punch it. And so he immediately goes to like punch the area where whatever would have grabbed him would have been. And from what I read is that he didn't really feel anything. Like, he didn't feel the sensation of punching something.
Mm-hmm.
More than he felt like a sensation of punching a large coat, and that he didn't make contact with anything solid when he did.
So he felt like there was resistance, but it was like,
yes, soft.
Yeah. I would imagine that would be like, if you've ever had to like go behind a curtain and like you grabbed it wrong and you kind of like pushed your hand against it.
Yeah.
I would imagine that when he's being turned around, he's just punching. He's just punching straight.
Be.
And because there's nothing there, he's like, that was a ghost.
Clearly.
Not that was a person who just got away, who surprised me.
What else would be in a graveyard, Lindsay?
What else is going to be behind a tombstone grabbing you from behind, two hands on the neck and twirling you around, right? What else could there be with your two pockets and one jacket and possibly one friend with also two pockets and one jacket? Total four pockets, two jackets.
This is clearly the standard ghost story, Lindsay. I don't know
also
what you're getting.
The fact that I could just do all that, but I can't read a simple fucking sentence sometimes makes me feel just irate. I can't control this mouth sometimes.
It's fine. Now, we're going to get to another attack. This one's a little sad, but again, some of these were uncertain if it's accurate or true. But anyways, so another incident involved an unnamed pregnant woman.
Pregnant with one
and
child.
And you know that we get skeptical when they're unnamed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, either way, with like cryptids too, we're like, who is that? We can't find record of it.
Yeah.
This person is completely unnamed. But the story goes, she was walking in the churchyard around 10 p.m. when a white ghost materialized from the tombstones and then went after her. She attempted to flee, but she was caught. The way that we understand the story, the ghost kind of, for lack of a better word, bear hugged her and grabbed her. And then she fainted.
So, like, they gave her a hug around the arms, not under the arms.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So they, like, grabbed her like that, and then she fainted.
Mm-hmm. Relatable. I would do that too.
Hours later, some neighbors found her passed out in the yard. They woke her up and then they took her home. So good neighbors. Then the story says that she went to bed and she never woke up again.
An everlasting faint.
After reading a bunch of articles, there are several variations to the story, including her not dying, but ending up bedbound. And then one other story said that she miscarried.
Oh, that's very sad.
So,
yeah.
Not 100% sure what happened. Or, again, this person's unnamed and we couldn't really find a record of her. So, uncertain. Hopefully, you know, no one died from this.
Yeah.
In being scared to death or lost a child because of it. Now, another encounter is with another woman who was elderly. She was also attacked by the ghost near the churchyard. And she also is said to have died later. Again, not much info on her. No name, not a year or a date or anything like that. But because of all of these encounters, people in the village were super scared. A lot of them were avoiding the area, so like the churchyard. And some weren't even going outside at night altogether. Like they were just too freaked out.
Yeah. I would also just point out that this is very indicative to me of like a group of people being like, there's not a bad person here. There's a bad something. When we talked about werewolves, we talked about how people couldn't fathom that there being many bad people or people who could do such a things. So they're like, oh, we'll blame it on this mystical thing because we can't fathom this happening otherwise. Because someone attacking a pregnant woman is pretty fucking awful, or scaring an old woman to death also seems pretty fucked.
Yeah.
Mr. Russell, he just seems like he's a scaredy cat. No judgment, Mr. Russell. I too am. And then Thomas's story, that sounds like perhaps someone just grabbed him. And even the story about the pregnant woman, like she was bear hugged, right? And then like she tried to get away and they caught her. But that means they would be behind her.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things where it's like it could be a person here or it could be a ghost. But either way, the village is like, this is a ghost. We've had a fucking enough. We're done. We're going to stand up to this ghost. It's not going to bully us around anymore. And some people did think that it was just someone fucking with them.
Mm-hmm.
So there were groups of men who decided they were like, we're going to catch this motherfucking ghost. Like, let's fucking go. And they set up armed patrol teams to watch the streets at night. So they've got Neighborhood Ghost Watch. I would watch that show.
For sure. All I kept thinking, though, is the scene in Beauty and the Beast when all the townspeople are going after the beast with their fires and like pitchforks and stuff. Like, that's what I had in my head.
I also pictured villagers with like a torch on like a big branch, not a reasonable torch.
Of course. Yeah,
of course. But so they've got their like ghost Paw Patrol, if you will.
Ghost Paw Patrol?
Yeah.
They were a bunch of puppies running this village.
It was Hoof Patrol. It was the eight horses from the beginning. They're avenging the reputation of Mr. Russell.
Okay.
That's what this is. Hoof Patrol.
And then they went evil.
Yeah. No, no, no. These are good horses. These are good horses.
Oh.
Except one. So how many good horses are there if one horse is evil?
Oh, my God.
So tickled. Look, if anybody listens to this as a teacher and you write a math problem that has ghosts in it and you take a picture of it, we will send you a sticker.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so, okay, we are talking old timey town village. We've got the Hoof Patrol of men who are armed looking for a ghost milling about. And yet there's still streets. So if it's one person just flitting about, it's not necessarily difficult to think that they could get in and out of Hammersmith without being seen. It's dark. There's not a lot of lights. Whatever. The white figure continues to terrorize the village, as white figures often do. So one patrolman spotted the figure and he chased it. And when he reported back, he was like, I saw the spirit rip off a large white cloth before it escaped. So I've got questions. Why are you calling it a spirit if it ripped off a sheet? Did it rip off a sheet to be nothing, or did it rip off a sheet to be a dude?
I don't know. It was too dark to tell.
I'm assuming this is dude behavior. This is not like anyone but a dude behavior. We can agree on that, I think. But we don't know what he saw underneath the sheet.
Nope.
Some reports say that this was a night watchman named William Girdler, and we'll talk more about him later. I just need you to know, I love when lore includes names But I also am so aware of the fact that one of the ways that people legitimize lore is by giving it like real ass sounding names and giving like facts that you can't back up. And again, we talked a lot about that in our Bunnymen episode, which was a while ago. But that was like a really fun research for the same reason. It's like, it sounds super real because we're giving you like dates and names and places. But like,
So, yes. And it's interesting that the first people didn't have names for the most part. But like Girdler, we're going to talk about more. And he is in trial paperwork.
Yeah.
So he for sure Z's existed.
Yeah, he's for real Z's. But I'm talking about Mr. Russell.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Russell. We don't know. But anyway, so on January 3rd of 1804, a 29-year-old man named Francis Smith was over whatever was scaring the villagers. He's like, I'm done with this shit. I don't want it terrorizing my neighbors and friends and everyone anymore. So he wanted to put a stop to it. And he's like, if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be me then. Because the patrolmen and all of that have already failed.
He's like, could only be I.
Can only be I. Now, some reports say, not all of them, though, say that he decided to prep for his ghost hunt by, you know, drinking at the local pub.
That's a bad idea.
You see where this is going. Not a great idea. No. Just thinking about even like doing our ghost investigations after drinking.
No.
Sounds even more horrifying.
No. When I went to Pennhurst, they were like, if you're any sort of inebriated, no.
Good.
Do not. There, especially because it's dangerous, but any. Don't do that. That's a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, this guy's armed. So a drunk armed guy never ends well.
That feels like America.
It does. So now to make this next part of the story make sense, we have to back up a little bit and tell you about another man named Thomas Millwood. And just as a note, if you do end up like Googling his name or something, it's spelled two different ways in various texts. So it's M-I-L-L-W-O-O-D. And then sometimes there's only one L, which I thought was interesting.
So sometimes it's like the word mill wood.
Mm-hmm.
And then the word mill. Here's our word problem. Two L's minus one L wood.
Oh, my gosh. She's really into math today.
I'm mathin'.
You're mathin'. So Millwood worked as a bricklayer. And his uniform consisted of
a full-ass fucking look. A full-ass fucking look is what it had.
Of course. So it consisted of white linen trousers, a white flannel waistcoat, and a white apron. Do you see where the story is going?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So Millwood had already been mistaken for the ghost twice while walking at night. One of the times, a man and two women were in a carriage, and they saw him and yelled, "There goes the ghost!" Millwood was super pissed. He was like, I'm not a fucking ghost, right?
Can you imagine getting like super mad about it? Like, I'm not a fucking ghost. It's like,
I know.
Sir, calm down. Like, I'm driving by. What's going to happen here? Like, what's the worst?
So he's pissed, right? He replies that he was no more a ghost than the man in the carriage.
Sick burn.
Sick burn, yeah. This part was my favorite. Then he asked the man if he'd like a punch in the head.
But I mean, like, would you like a punch in the head? I do like the idea of just like calmly, if someone's being kind of a dick, being like, oh, would you like a punch in your head? Would you like me to break your nose, sir?
He's so polite.
Just like
deadpanned.
That'd be scary. Yeah. Especially in a man wearing all white at night. Like, I don't think I'd like that.
But he's just walking home from work. He's like, sick of the shit.
Also, like, is he the only guy who's wearing white? Like, nobody else has this particular fit. It's just him.
Apparently. So Millwood's mother-in-law, Phoebe Fulbrook, is who him and his wife lived with. And she started to worry after he said the story. And she was like, there's people walking around armed looking for this ghost.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't want him to be mistaken for the ghost. So she pulls him aside and she's like, hey, could you cover your work clothes while out in public when walking home at night? Perhaps with a coat.
That feels reasonable. Also, you're walking around in white. It could just get messy.
That's true. Well, he refused. I think he was more upset about people thinking he was a ghost and also that someone was terrorizing the neighborhood. He was just like, no, I don't want any part of it. I'm going to be who I am. I'm going to walk home as I do.
It also sounds like he maybe thought it was a little bit foolish. Like he's like,
yeah,
guys, I'm just wearing white. Like, everybody, y'all need to grow up.
Right. And it's not like he had a sheet over his head or anything, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's just walking around in a uniform. So let's get back to Francis Smith and on the night of January 3rd. That evening, Millwood stopped at his parents' home to chat with his mother and his sister, Anne. That's around the same time that Smith started his patrol. Then, a little later, around 10:30 p.m., on the corner of Beaver Lane, Smith ran into William Girdler, the person we talked about earlier, the watchman. They chatted for a bit. and Smith told Girdler that he planned on hunting the ghost that evening. Smith also had a shotgun with him. Girdler was like, bet, I'll help you.
Bet.
Let me just finish checking out this area and call the hour. And I was like, I've heard of calling the hour, but I didn't know specifics about what that meant. And so we looked it up, and it is a tradition where a night watchman called out the hour to reassure the public and alert them of any potential threats. So he was like finishing up. It's like, you know, a half hour to the hour. He's finishing up his patrol. And basically what they do is they walk the streets. They look for things that are like out of character or threats like a fire or crime or any other disturbance. And they'd call it out. And then if they called out the hour, I believe that meant everything is fine. So he'd be like 11 o'clock, all is well.
This seems interesting. I feel like this is where the phrase no news is good news maybe should be. If I'm not screaming, there's a murder occurring in the street, it likely means that I am not aware that there's a murder going on the street. Likewise, if I'm not screaming fire, it probably means that there's not a fire. I don't think someone yelling the time would make me feel better. Also, it's 3 a.m. I'm trying to sleep and someone's like, it's 3 a.m. All's clear. I'm annoyed. Let me know when there's a problem.
Right. Interesting, though.
Okay.
Yeah. So he was busy. He's like, I'll get to you. I'll go help you ghost hunt, but I have to finish my job first.
Yeah. He's like, I got to do my yelling.
Yeah.
So that night, it was very dark. And when we mean very dark, we mean it was so dark that you couldn't see anything even across the road, which, I mean, that's pretty fucking dark.
Yeah.
And because of that, Girdler and Smith decided we're going to have a secret little code so that we know if it's each other. And honestly, this is the most common sense code that I could think of. I can't think of a single thing better than this. So this is how they would greet each other. One would walk up and he would say, friend. And the other would say, advance, friend. This is the code of two drunk men. And you cannot convince me otherwise. Like, advance, friend.
You know what? They thought of it ahead of time. I am like, okay. They realized that it was dark and that it was going to be hard to see each other. So they're like, we need a secret code. That's a lot of forethought from perhaps two drunk men.
You can be drunk and have ideas. It doesn't mean they're good ones.
No, they're not. But I just love friend. Advance, friend.
Also, just like, hey, it's me, Girdler. Who's there? It's me. Smith, we're good.
No, friend, advance, friend. That's going to be another takeaway.
Friend, advance, friend. It's just, it feels very bizarre. Maybe that's how they talked. I don't think it is. So, because they're separate, right? Smith is continuing his patrol. He's by himself and he sees a figure in the distance and it's around 11 p.m. And he's like, I have found this fucking ghost. I knew I would. Let's fucking go. And he's like, hey, stop. And because what he presumes is a ghost doesn't stop, he then shoots. Now, to literally no one's surprise today, it was not a ghost that he shot. So let's talk about what actually happened. We talked about Millward earlier. He was visiting with family and he's like, it's time for me to get home to my wife. So he says goodbye to his mom and his sister and he leaves. After he shuts the door behind him, his sister walks over to the door and heard the following pretty soon after the door was shut, which was, damn you. Who are you? What are you? Followed by, damn you. I will shoot you. Then Anne saw a flash of light out the window and the sound of a gunshot. She yelled out for her brother, but there wasn't a response. So she ran out of the house in the direction that her brother would have walked because, like, she knows where he lives, right?
Yeah.
And she saw him laying in the street dead, but there was no one else around. And so, again, it's so dark. It's not like she could have seen who had shot him, but I can't even imagine just like that sinking feeling in her stomach when she's like, I knew he was in danger. And it even sounds like, as dark as it was, it doesn't even matter that his outfit was all white. Like, he was just simply a person out in the dark at 11 p.m. with somebody who was incredibly reckless.
Yeah.
So there are variations of the next part, but a common one is as follows. After Millwood was shot, Smith headed for the White Hart pub where he met up with Girdler. Then the two of them, with two other men, made their way to where Smith had fired his gun. And the part where the sources vary on this is whether they left with the two men or if they saw the two men on the street on their way and then they joined with them. So Smith told Girdler that he feared that he had hurt whoever was the ghost badly. And Girdler had mentioned he heard a gunshot, but he didn't think much about it because apparently hearing gunshots was fairly normal for the time.
Not weird.
That feels very weird. It's 11 o'clock at night. We're just fucking just Yosemite Samming around. That doesn't make any sense to me. But OK, if you're worried about a ghost grabbing people and touching them, I certainly feel like you should be worried about phantom gunshots.
Right.
But later during the trial, little spoiler alert there, he mentioned, I did not take any notice of it because I hear them every quarter of an hour, almost all night.
That's unsettling.
Yeah.
Every 15 minutes, there's guns going off and they're like, meh. Happens.
No worries. That's my quarter to 11 gunshot. So when the four men approached whomever was shot, they then realized that Smith had shot a man in the jaw. Girdler then picked up Millwood's body and brought him back to the Black Lion pub.
I feel like this was just like the meeting spot for everyone, a local pub at the time.
Yeah.
Because a surgeon named Mr. Flower then was called by the coroner, and he reported that Smith's shot penetrated the lower left jaw, vertebrae in the neck, and then the spinal marrow.
So it like kind of went down. So it like went in through his jaw and went down and back.
Yeah. So then the coroner labeled it, quote, willful murder. So murder.
Mm-hmm.
Smith surrendered himself very quickly to authorities, and he was very remorseful. He was taken to Newgate Prison to wait for his trial. And he truly thought he shot a ghost, which is very bizarre because I don't know at any time that a gun would be the appropriate way to stop a ghost.
Yeah, I think it would have to do with maybe like their regional understanding of like how to stop a ghost, quote unquote, right? Because perhaps they thought that the materials that the bullet were made of would be something that would get rid of it.
Maybe. But he was remorseful. He really, really felt sorry for what he had done. So let's talk about the trial. On January 13th of 1804, the trial began. The trial became a talking point in English legal history, which is so bizarre, right? You wouldn't really think a haunting turned murder. Now it's like historical.
Mm-hmm.
Smith admitted to killing Millwood, but he was adamant that it had been a mistake and he pled not guilty. Through the trial, Smith showed many signs of shame and remorse to the point where he couldn't even stand up unassisted and he had a hard time speaking. And there was even a report that spectators of the trial felt bad for him. Like, he just looked so pitiful and remorseful that people were like, we actually have sympathy for him.
I don't like that. Ew. Like, I get that you didn't think that you were shooting a person, but you took real world actions and those have real world consequences. And that man was just going home.
Right.
You made real decisions. You made the decision to drink. You made the decision to operate a gun. You are responsible for those, as far as I'm concerned. I don't care how bad you feel.
Right.
It's like, oh, I feel so bad that I hurt you. Get fucked. I appreciate your guilt. It should not change the culpability.
Yeah. So Smith even testified, and he said that he called out twice to the white figure approaching him and received no response. He became, quote, so much agitated by what he thought was now a real ghost that he shot the gun out of panicked fear. Millwood's sister testified, and she said that she did hear him call out, but he fired almost immediately after shouting. So remember the, damn you, I'll shoot.
Mm-hmm.
That's from her and what she heard. Smith's defense had several character witnesses who stated that he was a gentle and mild-mannered man and that he had good intentions being out that night with his gun.
I mean, it is vigilante justice. We kind of romanticize that to a certain extent. People taking justice into their own hands. I'm not saying he should have. I'm just saying that, like, that sways people sometimes.
Right, right. And after all the witnesses were called, the judge, Lord Chief Baron MacDonald, spoke with the jury and explained that nothing in the case could have made the offense anything else but murder. The example that he gave at one point was about a man who was setting out with the intent to shoot a highway robber. And in my head, I was like, shout out to the evil horses, because that's who had them before highway robbers.
It also is a vigilante, though. Again, that's another situation where you're like, you're crime fighting, but that's not your role.
And if the man had shot someone he thought was a highway robber, but it turned out not to be, that would still be considered murder. The judge also mentioned that even though Smith was disgusted with the fact that someone was, you know, terrorizing the community, it didn't entitle him to go out with a loaded gun and shoot the person. So even if there was a person under a sheet fucking with people, you can't just go kill them.
Mm-hmm.
After an hour of deliberation, the jury came back with a verdict. They said Smith was guilty of manslaughter.
I don't like that.
Which was a charge that wasn't even brought against him. So the judge was like, hey, jury, that is not an option. You're here to convict or acquit Smith of murder and nothing else. He also said even if Millwood had shot someone posing as the ghost, he'd still be on trial for murder. He still murdered someone, so it's murder.
Yeah. The jury really believed that there should be some consideration for Smith, given that it seemed as though he genuinely believed that he was shooting a ghost. But there's not really a mechanism for that within the judicial system, whether you're talking about American or English, right? But there's not really a mechanism to deviate from guilty or not guilty of murder. It's like you don't get to be like, or we choose our own adventure and pick a different charge. Right. So
yeah.
They deliberated again and they came back as guilty. Smith was then sentenced to be hanged. But because the case had gotten so much attention, the judge ended up referring the case to the crown, King George III. So although Smith was found guilty and sentenced to death, the crown issued what they called a respite during pleasure. And this meant that the execution was paused indefinitely while a king decided what to do next. And in the end, Smith's sentence was reduced to just 1 year of hard labor on January 25th.
It's a big difference.
I cannot imagine being his family, being like, he cried about it, so now I don't have justice.
Mm-hmm.
Don't like that. That's why we don't have a monarchy, my guys. So this became a landmark case in English legal history. And it raised the question that we still see today. Can someone be held criminally responsible for killing someone if they genuinely but mistakenly believe that they were defending themselves? This particular case set a precedent around the limits of self-defense and the concept of mistake of fact in criminal law. It helped define how the law balances intent, belief, and responsibility, and when fear can lead to a fatal consequence. So if you're thinking, say you are walking down the street, you think someone is about to stab you, but they're holding a banana, can you kill them? I think that's like the real world today example. And the answer to that question in America is it depends on who you are.
I hate it here.
So the same question was raised again in a landmark appeal in 1983 in a case where a man, Gladstone Williams, saw what he thought was an assault occurring. And I do want to point out that when we talk about precedent cases just in general, that they can change over time. What was precedent at one point can change at another time. And in order to change a precedent, you need a new occurrence. You can also hone in on one. It could be that it is broadly mistake of fact could be considered a defense, but then you could narrow it further to a reasonable mistake of fact. When you look at the totality of the circumstances, does it actually make sense that you believed that, or is it utterly ridiculous? So in Williams' case, someone was dragging a younger man who was yelling for help. So then the witness, which was Williams, sprang into action to help, and he ended up hurting the person who he believed was attacking what he believed was the victim. But what was actually happening was that a bystander had tried to stop a thief. So Williams ended up hurting someone who was trying to stop a thief rather than stopping someone from attacking someone else. So Williams was convicted of assault, but he appealed. And the Court of Appeal ruled that the appeal was allowed and the conviction was quashed. And again, because they honed in on the fact that, hey, does a mistake of fact never matter? Or is it when it's like a reasonable person could think that that was happening?
Mm-hmm. And he didn't kill him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
yeah,
still bad. Yeah. But he didn't kill him.
Yeah, that matters. But when we're talking about like the mistake of fact part, that ends up being like you can apply that to a lot of violent crimes, right? Like it could be a great many things. But so this same scenario made it into a law in 2008 in the Criminal Justice and Immigration Act of 2008. In Section 76, this section of the law spells out when someone can use force in self-defense or to stop a crime. So if a person genuinely believes that they're in danger or a crime is being committed, they can use force to protect themselves or others, even if that belief is incorrect. But the response has to be reasonable. Typically, reasonable is proportionate.
Yeah.
The reasonable part is a reasonably prudent person in that particular circumstance. But so it's so bizarre to think that Smith shooting what he thought was a ghost helped shape what self-defense laws when it comes to violent crimes is today. I also do just want to point out just ever so briefly, because I think that sometimes we get a little bit mixed up with the order of operations between court precedents and laws. So if there is a law that exists that is unjust, you can bring a case to sue to have that law overturned because it is unjust. And then it will get appealed up. So where the law is black and white, the court has to make a judgment based on the situation. And that ends up clarifying laws. So a law might say you can't murder people. And then the precedent says, and that includes it's still murder, even if you didn't think you were murdering a person. And then it takes it one step further and says, you can't murder people, and mistaking fact isn't a defense unless you were trying to save someone else and protect them. You see how it kind of changes over time? And then the honestly cleanest way to have a very clear rule is you then legislate that. You say, like, this is how this grew over time and how we clarified it. And this is what actually like makes sense to be just. So you start with don't murder people. Hey, even if you don't think you're murdering them, it's still murder. But if you end up injuring someone because you think you're saving someone else, depending on the circumstances, that might be okay, so long as you use proportionate force. And then you legislate it. So you have this nice long thing that is based on real world examples versus someone in the beginning trying to say, like, don't murder people, but I'm going to think up every single possible scenario. Because when you write a really narrow law, then it's hard to make room for the messiness and gray areas that are life. My point is that it helps to create laws that actually are applicable to the world that we live in versus some hypothetical scenario for a legislator.
So that murder was talked about fairly recently, right? To define what needed to be changed and how to put it into law.
The law nerd in me loves that progression, though. It's a clean progression.
Ish. But now back to the haunted village. The question is still there. Who or what was haunting the area?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't Millwood, right? He was just walking. Now, there are many theories and even some confirmed people. So let's dive into a few. In January of 1804, a Coldstream Guard soldier claimed that he saw a headless ghost between 1 and 2 a.m. Other soldiers, too, said that they saw this ghost. But what it ended up being was just two schoolboys who set up a magic lantern projector in an empty house.
Scooby-Doo shit.
So what they saw was just a projection, not a ghost. And yes, that is very Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, that's absolutely Scooby-Doo shit. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Another one, but this one's a confirmed person, was James Graham, the shoemaker. He was arrested in January of 1804, and he was charged with being a nuisance. But some sources say that there was no actual record of him being arrested or getting charged with anything. But when he came forward, though, he turned himself in. But there's varying times of when he did this. Either it was after the conviction, and then some sources say it was a few days after the shooting because he felt bad.
Yeah.
But what he did is he would go out at night with a white blanket, and he said that he only wore the white blanket to scare specific people. And those specific people were his apprentices. Because he was pretty pissed off that they scared his children when telling ghost stories. So he became a ghost to get them back.
Just feels like a little prank. Little harmless prank, no worries. Not like attacking people from behind tombstones.
Exactly. And he did this prior to the shooting, so it wasn't after. He just wanted to scare a particular group of people. But unfortunately, it wasn't only the apprentices that were scared. Other people saw him too, including William Girdler. And so I wonder if that might have been the person he chased. Maybe. That's my theory. It's nowhere that I saw. And then other townspeople also saw him and were scared. After Graham's confession, though, the Hammersmith ghost did stop haunting the area for a bit, interestingly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But in 1824, the ghost was spotted again. But this one seems way more terrifying.
Yeah.
Because it was carrying hooks and it was scratching women's faces.
That just feels like a different thing. That's something yes. else entirely. We're bringing now like weapons into the mix.
Yes.
That's a bit different.
Yeah. Oh, and you know, some say that he also could now breathe fire in some sources, but it could be the next account as well. It's kind of unclear. You know, typical ghost breathing
I'm sorry,
fire.
Is this just a dragon?
Yeah.
Is this just a dragon though? Because like we've got talons and breathing fire. We're now in cryptid territory.
It's the Jersey Devil.
The Hammersmith Devil.
Yeah.
That actually sounds kind of badass.
But this one actually turned out to be just a farmer from Harrow, and he was sent to the House of Corrections for terrorizing the women.
Fascinating. So then we have a pause because he's sent away. He's occupied, retained, if you will. In 1932, the ghost is sent back. And now he's got a new situation. Now this bitch can climb walls and he has talons. He has evolved. He's a new Pokemon. Typically, so what people would say they saw him do is he would scare someone, then skitter up a wall. And like, again, as Amanda mentioned, maybe he's the one that was breathing fire. So he's like, it's a scare, skitter, breathe hot, if you will, right? Scare, skitter, breathe hot. I don't know. That feels weird. That's an interesting series of events that I can't take seriously. My brain just makes it whimsical every time. Like, boo! And then it skitters up and goes,
and we couldn't find any record of like who this was or why.
In my brain, I can only picture him as the little lizard guy from Frozen 2.
Fair.
Which, who would be scared of him? What a little scamp. So some people do think that Hammersmith is actually haunted by a true and actual ghost. And there are lots of sightings, and not all of them fit in to the scenarios that we talked about where someone was either arrested or they confessed. And some legends of the ghost say that the ghost comes back every 50 years at midnight on a full moon in the churchyard. Others believe that it was just a bunch of different people from different times taking part and trying to scare people after hearing about one of the sightings. And we've seen that with cryptids, too. And it could also be our favorite, a tulpa. I would say that would be more likely as like it goes on and on and on, especially based on like when it's new, it's less likely. But if it becomes part of your town's lore and everybody believes it so thoroughly, maybe.
Yeah.
Also, like, could you imagine being a ghost and you're like, ooh, this town is looking for one. Is it me?
It me.
Yeah, like it's me. They have a little sign outside of their town that says vacancy, ghost wanted, to blame. And they're like, it could be me walking in. And then to go kind of full circle, some people believe that Thomas Millwood now haunts the Black Lion Pup. And remember, that's where he was taken after he was shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so there actually might be multiple hauntings. There's even a plaque outside the pub that also talks about the ghost and the murder. The area attracts tourists and paranormal enthusiasts. I would absolutely go there.
Yeah.
The story of the Hammersmith ghost, including encounters and sightings, has been passed down through generations in the area. Can you say it with me? Tulpa. The story has also influenced literature and art. And the Hammersmith ghost has even been, you know, part of the inspiration for various different ghost books and video games. It's not like just about the Hammersmith ghost, but it's like a part of the lore is with it.
Yeah.
And then another interesting thought is that the Hammersmith ghost may have helped to codify the image of a ghost under a sheet. So we talked about the background of this before, but some believe that the specific image of a ghost under a sheet holding its arms up beneath the sheet comes from the Hammersmith ghost. And actually, I think it's our very first ghost episode where we talk about the actual history of why do we see ghosts in sheets and shrouds. If you haven't listened, it's a while back, but it is a fun listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I thought it was interesting that like the specific one of the ghost with his arms up, that's Hammersmith.
And also the ghost holding two glass googly eyes at boob level is also from the Hammersmith ghost. A classic image. Everyone is.
She's really trying to make this happen.
It's happening. I got like the most intense eyes just now.
She already opened Canva to start.
Okay. It's one ghost, two hands, two glass googly eyes at two boob level.
You're welcome.
Math.
Yes, math.
Brought to you by Sharks. Are you looking for a new math lesson? It could be us, ghosts, who are bad at math. It's not helpful, but it is fun.
Workbook coming soon.
Confusing children all across the world.
Yeah. So this was an interesting topic because it really shows how folklore, legends, stories, and fear can influence someone's behavior and ultimately even end someone's life.
It also points out that the legal system is based on humans and how we interact with the world and how it evolves. That the law really, it does follow what we believe and see and how the world works. And so when we think about what does the system that we create look like, it is a system created by people. So what people believe and value on a person-by-person level ends up going into the system. We make the system. And then I step back down and I say, I'm done being so excited to talk about the law.
So if you ever have a suggestion for a case to cover, please let us know. Or haunting. We love our hauntings. And also, because we are recording this after our Patreon night, we want to take a moment to thank all of those that participated in our first annual Unknown Party. It was so much fun, and it even went on longer than we expected it to. We both looked at the time. We're like, oh my gosh.
I was like, I didn't even realize the time. And I was like, I haven't eaten dinner. It's like 11:30 at night. Like,
yeah.
It was so much fun. And I loved it. It was such a good time.
Yeah. And we'll periodically be sharing our cryptid creations from that night. So that was like our party, is we all made our own cryptids. They have insane backstories.
Detailed.
That are nonsensical.
Yeah. They're perfect.
Yeah. Everyone came to really play that night. Like, it was gold.
I am ready. Also, if you are one of our Patreons and you got your mystery mail, you can also still make a cryptid and send it in, and we'll still make a little graphic for you. You can do it at any time. Whenever you make it, you send it. We also sent, like, there were sticker sheets with cryptid pieces, if you will, and they built cryptids out of those. There's so many to build. You could build, like, 19 cryptids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we met a lot of great characters that night.
We did. So, hey, Amanda, quick question. Okay.
It's just so sick of my shit today.
Okay. If you have 4 sticker sheets that have different parts of the body, and you have 2 of each sticker sheet, and there are roughly, I don't know, 12 body parts on each one, understanding that you can use those body parts as anything, how many cryptids can you make?
The answer is unlimited. Unlimited cryptid.
No.
The limit does not exist.
There we go. You got there. I started saying it. I was like, we'll be there. The limit does not exist. Accurate.
Perfect. But yeah, if you have your sticker sheets, send them our way. If you want to add some backstory, if you want Lindsay and I to make the most unhinged backstory, we're willing to do that for you as well. But yes, special thank you to everyone that participated, and always a thank you to our patrons, because you guys are amazing and you make the show possible.
Yeah. We appreciate you so much.
And with that, everyone, have a great weekend.
Thanks for creeping with us.
Thanks for listening. And as always, a special thank you to our patrons who support us via Patreon.
Please see the link in our show notes to learn more about how you, yes you, can begin to haunt the dump, guard vortexes, or even become a scorching Sasquatch.
Ooh.
Also in our show notes, you can find the link to our website, more information on our sources, our social media handles, and our merch store.
We'd love for you to keep creeping with us. So if you like this episode, please subscribe, rate, review, and share the show with your fellow creeps and or ghosts.
I beg of you. Because you brought up Beauty and the Beast, I have to tell you this. So, you know, you're scrolling on a TikTok, you know?
Always.
And they're like, search this thing and it'll tell you your whatever, right? I kept seeing ones that were like, search Disney Prince and see which one is your partner. And like the videos, it's always like a perfect match. When I searched mine, it was Gaston. I laughed for a solid 2 minutes. 2 fucking minutes I laughed. Because I was like, he doesn't not look like him, but he has a beard. Do you know what I mean? I was just like, this is the funniest thing in the world to me. I don't know why I found it so funny, but I did. But yes, I pip pip cheerio. Good man. Good fellow. I'm not a fucking ghost. You aren't a punch in your own noggin.
Exactly.
And that's when people from England stopped listening to us, because we've lost the Midwest. We've lost England. We've lost everyone. I'm sorry.
Spice Girls fans.
Spice Girls fans? I think the Spice Girls fans liked it. I assume that it wasn't the fan part. It was the me part. It's okay. It's okay. You can like the Spice Girls and not like me. It's not illegal, but it is frowned upon.
It is frowned upon. Yeah. Yeah. It is soon to be illegal, though.
Soon to be illegal. Yes. Yes. True Creeps lobbyists. That's our next arm on American murder. I can't. What's happening?
Every bad review is also always my behavior. It's always me. And I feel so bad because Amanda's professional. And I'm like, anyway, here's a parody of me singing badly to become one to a ghost theme song, or me having a very reasonable understanding of a word that most people do. And I'm not getting into it. I'm just going to get mad again. Anyway, let's talk about Mr. Russell's math problem. So he was driving a wagon with 8 horses and 16. I can't even say it.
Well, I think that might be our takeaway from this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I also do, like, I'm Mr. Russell now. That feels good in my soul.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully there'll be more. There'll be more.
Don't you know there will be?
Don't you know?
I'm not Midwest, and that was a terrible accent. I'm sorry. Don't leave a bad review because of me again, please.
No, we just really like Bobby's work.
Oh my God. I still, when I take a shower, I really scrub behind my ears because of that fucking show, because she was so serious about it. Like, that's, I remember him as a little tricycle, his accent, and I don't even know the context of being very serious about scrubbing behind one's ears. Do you remember that?
Oh, that show. What a gem.
That's the one thing that's missing from most ghost stories. What is wrong with me? So, one patoma. And yet I could do that whole thing with the math earlier, and I was just so good at it. I'm Mr. Russell now.